Hello, I'm Max Kalinovich. This is number 0244, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0244. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Tony Lynn Hornung, who is the author of How to Raise a Husband.
I was having lunch with a girlfriend of mine, and she was telling me a story about how she left her toddler alone with her husband, just to go out of the room for a second. And when she came back, her husband was watching TV, and her kid was trying to crawl off the couch. And while she was telling me the story, I thought, oh my, she has to raise her husband along with her kid. And a couple of days later, the title How to Raise a Husband popped into my head, and I thought, that's funny, somebody should write a book about that. And then a little while later, I thought, I'm a writer, and I'm married, I could write a book about that.
Erica Elson, co-author of The Awkward Human Survival Guide. She and her co-author are always looking for awkward material.
Anything unusual, if we see something bizarre, we think, oh, let's just try this and see what happens. For instance, this is in the introduction of the book, but I decided to hire a nude cleaner from Craigslist just to see how that would be.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and this time Book Banter looks at the human side of Alzheimer's disease with Eric Rill's novel, An Absent Mind. It's a compelling book, and I'll talk about it shortly on the Stuff File program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0244, was Max Kalinovich, who is a camera intern at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Max, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, once again, we have a story that could only happen in Florida. There's something about Florida. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the water. But bizarre stories always come from Florida. Anyway, a Florida judge was a little surprised when a bailiff announced the name of the man who was appearing in his courtroom on drug possession charges. Edward Cocaine. What? Judge John J. Hurley responded. You know, I thought I'd seen it all. Mr. Cocaine explained, my last name is Cocaine, he said. My great-grandparents came over here from Greece, and they changed it. That was like in the 1920s. How many times have the police told you to step out of the car during your life? Hurley said. Just about every time I get pulled over, Cocaine replied. The 34-year-old, who was accused of possessing Xanax, was released on his own recognizance. Okay, admit it. Aren't you kind of curious to go rummaging through Ancestry.com right about now? Yeah. Anyway, when a New York State trooper pulled over Danielle Connor Willowglade, age 30, he noticed a tuba in her back seat. She told the officer she was a music teacher in Rochester and a music teacher in nearby Livingston County. Investigators contacted the school and discovered several instruments were missing. Connor Willowglade allegedly confessed to stealing up to 50 instruments and going with her boyfriend, Nicholas Bump, age 32, to sell them in various pawn shops. Bump and Connor Willowglade allegedly would travel together and then alternate going into the shops to pawn the instruments. Connor Willowglade said she carried out the scheme to feed a heroin addiction. Both face multiple charges in several counties. Ironic, don't you think, how they would steal instruments to feed their drug habit, but now they'll have to face the music. Yes. Anyway, Michael Smith works nights and was rudely awakened by a tree trimmer at 10 a.m. Smith went outside his Norwich Walk main house, shirtless, to tell the company to leave. He then went back to bed, but minutes later, the Maine State Police and state troopers surrounded the house and, over a megaphone, told him to come out and make no sudden moves. Now, this was the second rude awakening of the day, but Smith did what he was told, I got plans today, Smith said later. I don't want to get shot. Sure enough, as reported by the tree trimmer, Smith had a gun tattooed on his belly. Obviously, it was a misunderstanding, and he didn't have a weapon, a trooper said, but he was yelling, and they thought it could be some sort of threat. But because Smith clearly wasn't trying to use the gun as a threat, he wasn't pointing to his gun or anything like that, the trooper said, he therefore wasn't charged. So, let me get this straight. Guys who work with chainsaws all day are afraid of another guy because of a gun tattoo. All righty then. And while we're talking about without shirt or sans clothing, Maura Fusell's husband was arrested and held in the Arlington County, Washington jail. Now, later that night, Maura, age 31, came to visit him, allegedly drunk and not dressed appropriately for the occasion. Not dressed appropriately as in, well, not dressed. Maura was given several opportunities to put her clothes back on, exit the magistrate's office, and go home in a cab, according to Arlington police spokesperson Dustin Stenbeck, but she refused and was taken into custody and charged. The charges include indecent exposure and public drunkenness. She was held in a different section of the jail, and both were released the next morning. Well, as they say, true love waits. Yes, it does. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before I start this story, let me just state for the record that I do not feel any remorse for stupid people when they are confronted with karma. Okay? Just putting that out there right now. Here we go. According to police in Dublin, Ireland, a member of a criminal gang chose the wrong weekend to set a car bomb. After planting the device in a Volvo, the bomb blew up in his face rather than an hour later as he had said it. In the UK, daylight savings time begins on the last weekend in March, and the Sunday morning bomber apparently didn't put his watch forward on Sunday, and the timer went off too soon, according to a police spokesperson. The bomber was seen running away with blood dripping down his face after the explosion, which destroyed the car. Again, I laugh in the face of criminal stupidity. Oh, the joys of karma. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the program, shall we? Tony Lynn Hornung has written a humorous primer for modern couples, offering wonderful insight into some of the more interesting situations that can arise in a marriage. She is the author of How to Raise a Husband, and she joins us on the line from Kentucky. Hi, Tony Lynn.
Hi, how are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Of course. Thank you so much.
First of all, I have to know, as a guy, am I actually allowed to even crack this book open?
Yes, absolutely. My husband has been great about this whole book, and he really loves it. It's written in a very humorous style, and if you ever really wanted to know what women think, this is the book for you.
Is your husband, does he have the opportunity to write the answer book to this, How to Raise a Wife?
Don't think we haven't discussed it, or it hasn't come up at all. He actually did write the afterword to this book, and wrote a really, really, really funny, just funny thoughts about the book and about how everything started. So there might be a blossoming writer in there, yes.
Now, what made you write this book?
Well, it's funny. The title of the book happened actually before the structure came. I was having lunch with a girlfriend of mine, and she was telling me a story about how she left her toddler alone with her husband just to go out of the room for a second. And when she came back, her husband was watching TV, and her kid was trying to crawl off the couch. And while she was telling me the story, I thought, oh my, she has to raise her husband along with her kid. And a couple of days later, the title How to Raise a Husband popped into my head, and I thought, that's funny. Somebody should write a book about that. And then a little while later, I thought, I'm a writer, and I'm married. I could write a book about that. So I wanted to include my own experiences. I wanted to interview other wives and include their experiences for being married, because I'm always looking to create a deeper understanding in my marriage, and this was a great way to explore that.
Now, there's a lot of humor in the book. When I was growing up, one of my favorite writers was Irma Bombeck. And I'm just wondering, are you kind of taking up the throne from Irma? Because no one's really replaced her since she, unfortunately, has left us.
No, no one has, and just the fact that you have included my name in a sentence with hers is a huge compliment. I don't know that anybody can ever replace her, but her sense of humor and her ability to tell truth with such a clever, clever style, I certainly love and have tried to employ that in my book as well, because I really wanted to write a book that would help people but would also make you laugh in the process.
Okay, so share with us some of the information you have from within your book. For instance, I understand, this is a very important one, how to survive pressure from your partner. What kind of pressure are we talking about, first of all?
Well, in this particular story, one of the wives is getting married, and her fiancé really wants to rush everything, and she wants to take it down a notch and kind of slow down. So it's a story about staying true to yourself while your partner is kind of, you know, trying to get you to change your mind or move at a pace that you're not comfortable with. So it's always a fine line in, you know, when to compromise for your partner and how to keep yourself intact and how not to compromise yourself. So that's what that story talks about.
Well, here's a question right out of left field, since you're also kind of a Dear Abby kind of person. I actually here live in the province of Quebec, so it's not an issue here, but it is in the rest of, well, the rest of Canada and also the rest of North America. And that is, what if you're in a relationship with someone, a woman, who doesn't want to take your name? And I say it's not a problem here because in Quebec, you're not allowed to take your husband's name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But
Well, here, you've come to the right person because I did not take my husband's name. I kept my name and he kept his. And the reason that I kept my name is because I am the last of my line. My sister and I are the last. There are no other Hornungs in our family tree because there are no other boys. And so my name was very important to me, and that's why I chose to keep it. But, I mean, I'm all for doing what makes you comfortable. I know a lot of my friends took their husband's name, and that's what they wanted to do, and that's great. But, yeah, I just really think whatever feels comfortable to you and whatever you want to do, then I think that's the way to go.
You also have tips, I understand, on how to stay cool in a heated discussion.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I think everybody, even if it's not with your spouse, you've had a heated discussion or a discussion starts to escalate with a friend or a partner, your parents, and there's a point, you know, you get to a point where it can kind of go over the edge where you get to a point where you just want to start saying things and sometimes you want to get angry and just start spewing whatever. And this story talks about how one wife kind of reined that in and pulled it back and listened to her husband and didn't just continue to say what she thought, even if she knew that she was right in the situation, because in this particular instance, her husband really, really wanted to be heard. And so she calmed down and listened to him, and then through her calmness, a solution was able to present itself much quicker than if the fight had escalated and just gone off the chart.
And it's funny, on a similar note, there was a story that came out just this past week talking about the fact that one of the things that leads to heated discussions and anger in relationships is actually being hungry.
Oh, I saw that. I didn't actually read it, but yes, I saw that.
Is that something that maybe by just simple osmosis you have learned over the years that you argue less on a full stomach?
Well, here's the thing. Again, come to the right person. I'm one of those people that if I don't eat, then I get really cranky really fast. And what's really funny is I have a 10-month-old son now, and he is the exact same way. There is no patience with his hunger. Oh, my goodness. So I'm not totally surprised that that might not be a thing. And I know that when I'm getting really hungry that I need to be aware of that. And I can actually look at my husband now. We've been married almost 10 years and say, I need to eat now. And he knows what that means. So we go somewhere where I can eat because I will just get super cranky. And anything that he says, I will just start becoming kind of contradictory about because I'm just I'm cranky and I'm hungry.
Now, the book is written with love and with humor. But have you come across people who might be a little miffed by the title?
You know, the title, again, the title is meant to be funny. The book, actually, when you take a closer look at it, the book is about how we raise each other in relationships. So what are my good points that help my husband become a better person? What are my husband's good points that help me become a better person? There are funny, there's humor, there are funny things that happen, but underneath it all, it's a deeper understanding of your relationship, and again, how we raise each other up in a rip. So hopefully people will think the title is funny and amusing, and then look past it and read the book and understand that that's what the book is about. There's no man-bashing, there's no nagging, it's just an honest account of wives in their relationships with their husbands.
Okay, so...
And I have to add, these wives were so honest and so great about revealing everything that went in their marriage, but kind of making themselves look a little imperfect, and I really applaud their honesty.
Okay, so it's just, you know, you, me, and the listeners. Your husband's nowhere around. How is life with you, your husband, and your mother-in-law?
You know what? We actually have a pretty good relationship with this, which is great. There, of course, have been instances where things kind of go, I wonder if I should say something about that. And luckily, I've been able to talk to my husband about it, and he has been able to be objective about things. And then we can talk it through and decide if it's something that we need to talk to his mom about. There's a story in the book where that couple, that dynamic is not as well-founded, which I know happens with a lot of people. Another one of the wives in the book, we didn't include their story, but she has a story about her mother-in-law as well. And it becomes difficult when a man gets married and has to be a husband to his wife, but is still a son to his mother. And that's a difficult dynamic for a son to negotiate, I now understand.
Well, there is also another dynamic involved that you alluded to a little while ago. You have a 10-month-old son, you say?
Yes, I do.
So now you're in the dynamic where you are the mother of her grandchild.
Yes, yeah.
And this is sometimes where... even in the most perfect of relationships, leading through the courtship and the marriage, things can go off the rails when parenting skills clash with the mother-in-law.
Absolutely. That's actually part of what the story in the book talks about, how this wife had just had a baby. I think their baby in the particular timeline is 9 months old or something, actually close to 10 months. But the same thing starts happening. She starts questioning her parenting skills. And, you know, as a new mom, you're kind of insecure, but you also think, this is my kid. I'm doing pretty good at this so far. I've been with him a lot. I know what's going on. And so when that dynamic is kind of questioned like that, a lot of friction can happen. And then to approach your husband and say, hey, this is going on. And in this particular story, the husband is like, well, that's just the way she is, and just kind of dismisses the whole thing. Does not make for a comfortable kind of extended family dynamic. Luckily, so far, again, in my situation, my mother-in-law has been really supportive, and even if I'm sure she questioned some of the things that I might choose to do, she's always said, you know, I want you to do what you need to do. This is your baby. So luckily, we're great in that. But again, I know that a lot of people have a kind of strained dynamic. It's tough. It's tough when people think that they're right and they really, you know, want to give their advice and input because they've gone through that. They, you know, had their kid and they have things that they've developed and want to give you advice.
Now, I know the book only just came out this month, so maybe it's not a fair question to ask at this point, but you are also a well-known blogger as well, and this is a topic that you have touched on in your writings, both in magazines and online. So, now that the book is out, are you getting more reaction from people saying, oh, I've got a story to tell, or I've got a story to share, or oh, you hit the nail on the head, or that kind of thing?
Well, it's interesting. I did a book signing in my hometown this past weekend, which was a dream come true. And one of my friends who came to the book signing had just finished reading it. And she was talking about how she was reading a particular story, and she was laughing out loud and thought it was so great. And then it got to kind of the crux of the story. All of these stories have a deeper meaning behind what's going on. And she said she had to stop and go, oh, really? And then go back and come back and read it, because the particular truth in that story resonated with her so much, and she wasn't expecting it, that she had to reread it. And she then had to mark it and share it with her husband later, because that was something that she recognized within herself and in their relationship. So far, I've had really great response, which has been really great. Really, really excited about it.
Excellent. Well, the book is called How to Raise a Husband. It's written by Toni Lynn Hornung. And Toni Lynn, I thank you very, very much for being on the program. People can go to your website and find out more information, which is TonyLynnHornung.com, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. I had a great time.
Toni Lynn Hornung, author of How to Raise a Husband. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0244, and you'll find the links to Toni's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the co-author of The Awkward Human Survival Guide, How to Handle Life's Most Uncomfortable Situations. Plus, Stuart Nullman will be along with another edition of Book Banter. Of course, we have more Stuff File news coming your way, and the show doesn't end without an idiot of the day. That's coming up a little later on the program as well. A program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get back to the stuff. A fellow by the name of Kevin Quintanilla, age 31, was allegedly caught burgling a San Mateo, California restaurant, but fled before police could arrive. Employee Ashley Cullen, age 22, said she had previously met him when she was taking out the recycling late one night. He said he had seen me around and wanted to hang out, which was strange since it was already 1 a.m. when he approached me, Cullen said. So police started texting Kevin, pretending to be Cullen and setting up a first date. This genius decided, okay, sure, and he showed up there on Burlingame Avenue, said San Mateo County District Attorney Steve Wagstaff. Now, Kevin was met by undercover officers, arrested, and charged with 5 felonies, including burglary and possessing methamphetamine. Said Wagstaff, "This is a simple case, once again, proving when you think not with your brain, but with your emotions, such as this idiot was doing, you end up in the county jail." Well, couldn't have said that quote better myself. And, of course, now he certainly is guaranteed a date with a judge. Meanwhile, people sometimes stage ruses to avoid unpleasant tasks, such as a student who calls in a bomb threat when he's unprepared for an exam. But Dwayne Yeager's motivation was simple laziness. Yeager, who was 31, called police in Bradenton, Florida, in March, reporting a burglary at his home, but after questioning, officers charged him with making up the crime just so he could stay home from work that day. And coincidentally, in Kittery, Maine, 3 days earlier, the U.S. Navy formally decommissioned a nuclear submarine, the USS Miami, which had suffered irreparable fire damage back in 2012 caused by a shipyard worker. The worker started what he wrongly believed was a small blaze so that he could get off work for the day, a decision that is now costing him 17 years in federal prison. Too bad we no longer have prisons where people do hard labor. That would be the irony here, wouldn't it? Yes. Anyway, yet another questionable school suspension was handed down in March in Virginia Beach, Virginia, when a sixth grader who had prevented a classmate from intentionally harming himself was punished for her altruism. Adriona Harris had convinced a boy to hand over a razor blade that he was threatening to use on himself, and she immediately discarded it. Now, according to the principal, that transaction meant Harris possessed a dangerous weapon, albeit for a brief time, and she was suspended for 10 days, according to school policy. After WAVY-TV's On Your Side reporters got involved, the school relented and Harris returned to class. Okay, how about we suspend the moron principal for 10 days? That would work for me. Elsewhere, an officer saw a vehicle allegedly speeding in Stuart, Florida. The vehicle was stopped, and Michael Moore, age 61, was behind the wheel, reportedly smelling of booze and appearing drunk. Moore explained that he had a fight with his wife. He also told me that his wife told him that he had been drinking too much, so he decided to go out and drive it off. This according to the officer's report. And Moore said he was heading to a bar for a few more. Moore's blood alcohol was measured at 0.104 and 0.103%, and he was arrested for driving under the influence. Walking it off? Sure. Sleeping it off? You bet. Driving it off? Not too much. No. Could have made him the idiot of the day, but again, he was drunk, so... Well, anyway, we have time for one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And actually, it's a couple of oops moments here that we want to share with you. Two of them. Number one, Kentucky State Representative Leslie Combs unloading her .380 semi-automatic handgun in her Capitol office in Frankfort in January accidentally fired a shot into her furniture, said Combs. I'm a gun owner. It happens. In fact, she praised herself for being particularly careful to point the gun away from people while unloading it. Yeah, that's what she's proud of. Okay, then. And story number two. In March, an unnamed man was rescued by bystanders who heard screaming from a maze-like storm drain, which runs 12 feet below the street in Lawton, Oklahoma. The man had accidentally dropped a $20 bill through a grate and climbed in after it, wandering around underground for 2 days, searching for a way out. By the way, he never found the 20 bucks. Well, there's a guy who knows the value of a dollar. He can't hold on to them, but he certainly knows the value of them. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Erica Elson is the co-author of The Awkward Human Survival Guide. The subtitle of the book is How to Handle Life's Most Uncomfortable Situations. Erica joins us on the line from right here in Montreal. Hi, Erica. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going on the assumption that this is not a book for the Victorian crowd.
That's correct.
As I said, you're the co-author.
Yes.
You wrote it with Adam Madakis?
Exactly.
How did this book come to be?
So Adam actually writes for a website called Life Hacker, and he wrote a feature-length article called The Awkward Human Survival Guide that was based on a few weird experiences that we'd had, and a publisher got in touch with us and asked if he wanted to do a full-length book about it.
Now, not only do you do a book, or you have a book, rather, I understand that there's also a blog that goes along with this. There's a podcast that goes along with this. So has this become a bit of a career as opposed to a one-off book?
Kind of, yeah. We've always been interested in weird and awkward situations. For the past couple of years, we've tried to do a weird thing of the week just to inspire our writing. And so I guess the whole awkward thing has kind of become our thing.
Now, when you say you've always been interested into this kind of thing, what kind of awkward situations kind of catch your eye?
Anything unusual. If we see something bizarre, we think, oh, let's just try this and see what happens. For instance, this is in the introduction of the book, but we once decided to hire a nude cleaner from Craigslist just to see how that would be.
I would assume, since you mentioned Craigslist, I would assume that you can just find all kinds of weird on Craigslist. Do you have to go far to do your research and find stuff, or is it all around you, or do you find it's a little more difficult when you first started putting this together?
It's definitely all around us now. I feel like we used to seek out weird situations, and now they just come to us.
Well, that's what I was about to ask, too. Now that you've started doing this, or do people say to you, well, if you think that's weird, let me tell you this story?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes people just suggest things for us to do because they think we'd enjoy it.
So what are some of the weird things that have happened to you, or awkward things?
Well, actually, we decided to purchase a dining room table recently. And this was from Craigslist, but it was literally just a table. We weren't trying to seek out a weird experience. And when Adam went to pick it up, there was a large, naked woman sitting next to the table, which was covered in lots of different types of fluid. And so he had to deal with that in order to purchase the table.
So wait a minute, he still bought the table?
He did. It was such a good price, he had to buy it.
Wow. Okay, so are there not things... I guess you and Adam aren't the squeamish type, because... I would assume a lot of things you come across would send people screaming and running the other way.
For sure. We just embrace it.
So when you first started putting this book together, did you think that it was going to be something that would draw a lot of attention? Or did you have any qualms or concerns about putting a book like this together is what I'm getting at?
Kind of. I think at first we were worried that people might not react well to kind of some of the weirder chapters. That it might be too much for them, but actually the chapters that we found the weirdest have been the ones that are most popular and most talked about.
And what about the people who know you? And by that I mean, are people who see this book say, oh, this is typical Adam and Erica, or do people who know you who see this book go, what are these two thinking?
No, they think it's typical us.
So what does that say about the two of you?
I don't know. That's a good question. Perhaps we'll have to reevaluate our choices at some point, but for now we're okay with them.
Okay, so what are some of the other awkward things that you've come across?
I think we've all come across a lot of awkward people, like in customer service situations or at parties and stuff like that. So we recapped some of those conversations. I once went to get my driver's license renewed, and instead of processing my paperwork, the man at the renewal stand started telling me about how he was afraid that he was turning into a woman because of the estrogen in his tooth fillings.
Okay.
I actually got stuck there until they closed while I explained to him that I didn't think he needed to worry.
Now, I you do a lot of blogging as well, and if not mistaken, did you not write a blog piece on how to deal with telemarketers?
I did, yeah. I wrote an article about that.
So when we think of awkward, because, you know, the press release for the book and stuff you can see online for the book has some of the more outrageous, more outlandish things that might be inside the book, but awkward human experiences can be as simple as dealing with telemarketers, right?
For sure.
So let's just talk about that particular aspect. I mean, we get them all the time, telemarketers. You say there's a way to get them off the line to make sure they don't call back?
Yeah, a lot of people make certain mistakes that will make telemarketers call back. For instance, hanging up mid-conversation makes the telemarketer think that you just got disconnected and they'll call you back. Or being nice or like being human to the telemarketer and telling them things about your life, all that will get written down and then you'll get a call back being like, oh, so how was your dinner the other day? So these are all things that you shouldn't do. The most efficient way is to politely just tell them, please put me on your do not call list.
Now, you were actually a telemarketer at one point?
Yep.
How long did you do that job?
About 2 years, part-time.
2 years? Because to me, I've always maintained, and I've said it time and time again, that being a telemarketer is living on the dark side. Did you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely.
How do you keep, not necessarily your sanity, but... your self-esteem, not from the job itself, but from what people must say to you because people don't like telemarketers?
Well, so, I mean, I'm pretty lucky because I work for an arts organization that people actually like. So I make a decent amount of money from it. So at least I feel like, okay, well, not everyone that I call hates me because some people actually purchase. But the other thing is I just keep a diary of everything that happens there because some of the things that people say are so amazing, I have to write them down.
Now, getting back to your book, the Awkward Human Survival Guide, it's just out. But like I said, you've got the blog, you've got the podcast and the book. Do you see this as being an ongoing cottage industry?
I hope so. We actually have a movie script that's based on the book that we're working on right now that we'd like to do. It's a little bit more narrative, but it has a lot of the same stories.
Is there, I also noticed, again, on the website, you have people asking you questions. Is there a Dear Abby kind of quality to what you guys do now?
Kind of. After we published the book, a lot of people started telling us about their awkward situations, things that they might have not shared with us before. And so in the podcast, we just started doing a question segment with anything from, you know, sex to the workplace to things like, oh, my coworker likes to microwave eggs and tuna, and I don't know how to tell him. And we just kind of answer those on podcast.
Wow. Now, do you find, since you and Adam are into this and you've written the book, do you find that your scale of awkward has moved dramatically to either in one direction or the other? I mean, in doing this and in doing all the research, is there anything that surprises you or shocks you anymore as, boy, this is really awkward?
I definitely think that we appreciate awkwardness more. Like, we'll actually be happy when something awkward happens, whereas other people might be uncomfortable. One of my favorite things that's happened recently is we did an event for the book in San Francisco, and this man happened to be at the bookstore and came to tell us that he had an awkward problem and that he had an uncontrollable farting issue at work and didn't know what to do. And while some people might have been maybe a little bit put off by that much information being shared, we just thought it was such a wonderful moment. We were actually able to help the guy, and he was really happy. So it was kind of a victory for us.
Are you finding more and more that maybe the word awkward is a bit of hype, that you're just talking about human experiences?
Perhaps.
So it's possible that we are all awkward.
Yes, that's actually kind of one of the main points of advice in the book, is there are things that you can do in specific situations, but as kind of an overall guideline, awkwardness lives within all of us, and so we can either choose to run or we can choose to just embrace the situation and act like we're okay with it, and the awkwardness will probably go away.
The book is called The Awkward Human Survival Guide, How to Handle Life's Most Uncomfortable Situations. Erica, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us, and really continued success with all this. Sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for having me.
Erica Elson, co-author of The Awkward Human Survival Guide, How to Handle Life's Most Uncomfortable Situations. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0244, and you'll find links to Erica's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. I'd like you to meet an artist named Bob Cassily. Years ago, he was in Italy when a madman attacked Michelangelo's Pietà with a hammer. He was the first person to restrain the man and help save this priceless work of art. Years later, he made the headlines again by creating one of the most successful children's museums in America, the City Museum in St. Louis. I learned about Bob because even though kids love his museum, several personal injury lawyers had filed frivolous lawsuits against it. They were hurting the museum, so to fight back, Bob posted a sign listing all the firms that had sued him. Let's be fair, that's pretty risky, but his fans loved it, and the museum continues to grow. Bob passed away in 2011, and unfortunately, his famous sign is gone now too. Today I'd like to remember Bob Cassily, a man who was willing to fight for what is right. Learn more about the fight to put common sense back to work in America. visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder. But here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nallman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And back with us is indeed Stuart Nallman with another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter. On this edition of Book Banter, I'm going to look at a novel written by a Montreal writer, Eric Rill. And it takes on a very serious topic, but I think it's a very vital novel to read, actually.
Okay.
But since the first patient was diagnosed with a certain form of dementia by German physician Dr. Alois Alzheimer in 1906, this dreaded disease that severely attacks and deteriorates a person's cognitive and intellectual capabilities and forever carries Dr. Alzheimer's name now affects over 35 million people around the world. Now, on the surface, many people know how Alzheimer's disease virtually destroys the patient who is unfortunate to be diagnosed with it. However, this side of this disease that is not so well known is how it indirectly affects the people who are part of the patient's life. The husbands, wives, sons, and daughters, and relatives who have to deal with a family member who are afflicted. Now, Montreal novelist Eric Rill, whose two previous books were action thrillers, personally witnessed how Alzheimer's disease affected both patient and family members as his father suffered through it for 8 years. Now, for his third novel, Rill decided to forego the thriller and make it more of a personal novel and give the uninitiated what the true terrible phase of Alzheimer's is all about for everyone involved. And the end result is this sobering, compelling novel called An Absent Mind.
Now, it's interesting because, you know, you use the term which a lot of people use, and that is suffering through a patient suffering through Alzheimer's. What's interesting, and like Eric, I, too, was an Alzheimer's caregiver. My dad had it. And one of the things that doctors will tell you, especially neurosurgeons will tell you, in most cases, the patient doesn't do any suffering because their mind is slowly withering away. And when it reaches a point where they don't remember who they are or remember certain functions, they're not in a situation where they're in pain per se. The family is the one that suffers through the process.
Yes, and I agree with you on that one because it's, like you said, the family, it's almost like when the family member gets diagnosed, it's almost like has a ripple effect.
Right.
Actually. But the book, An Absent Mind, it focuses on Saul Reamer, who's a retired Westmount businessman in his 70s, who was diagnosed with Alzheimer's after an incident when he leaves his home one day without wearing his gray flannel trousers. What follows is a 690-day chronicle of how this diagnosis affects the entire Reamer family. There's Saul, his wife Monique, who ends up being the primary caregiver, his daughter Florence, and his son Joey, the perennial black sheep of the family, who's more concerned with his questionable business ventures than the well-being of his seriously ill father. Now, what makes the narrative so interesting is that the story of this painful odyssey, it's told not from an objective narrator, but from the points of view of all the members of the Reamer family. Allowing such a first-hand account narrative style that which pervades the text gives the reader a harrowing account of how destructive and degenerative this disease can be when it strikes someone and the psychological effects it has on each family member.
It's a cross. When you go through it, it's a cross between compassion, guilt, and anger.
Yes, it is. And I just want to let you know, it's not all 690 days chronicled day after day. It, you know, can jump from, let's say, a period of a couple weeks to, let's say, 2 or 3 years later. So it's not day after day, but it's within the 690-day period that's covered. So, but you see how gradually that the patient's cognitive abilities are destroyed as the disease progresses. There's a feeling of isolation and hopelessness as the caregiver watches the deterioration of their loved one. And there's, of course, the double-edged sword of the involvement of the patient's offsprings, whether there's one person who is very devoted and dedicated and takes that time, or someone who just pays lip service and does the odd visit for maybe a few minutes, and that's it. But I have to comment Eric Rill because he's done a more than write a fact-based novel. Through the art of fiction, he has given the reader who has just a basic knowledge about this disease a harrowing, hard-hitting look at the true nature of Alzheimer's disease. Through the struggles of Saul Reamer and his family, An Absent Mind gives us a very cruel, yet very necessary expose of how such a progressive, degenerative cerebral disease as Alzheimer's affects everyone. It's both shocking and informative, and hopefully it will shock and inform enough people to push even harder to find a cure that will eradicate the horrible devastation that is Alzheimer's disease.
You say that, hopefully, but the reality is it's not going to happen. And the reason is it's something that people don't think of unless it affects them. And even then, you know, it's something people don't think of unless it affects them.
So you think that there won't be there is awareness, but there won't be enough awareness that should be.
Oh, there'll be awareness, and there'll be people who are working on it, but it's not going to be a major priority. And let's be honest, the major bulk of the population, as far as people are concerned, are the baby boomer generation. And if they don't find a cure for Alzheimer's within that span of time, the numbers of people who suffer with it will diminish just by the fact that the largest part of the population that is old enough to have this condition will have gone. The problem will be when they decide or when they discover that Alzheimer's is starting to hit younger people than previously expected.
And as put this way, has that trend started yet?
There are people who are being diagnosed with it in their 40s, which has some people in the medical profession very alarmed.
So maybe that'll be the wake-up call.
Maybe. Yeah. There you go. Anyway, yeah. The book is called?
It's called An Absent Mind by Eric Rill. It's published by Avante Press, and it's $17 in trade paperback.
And dare I ask, if there's somebody else who wants to read something else on similar topics, is there something you can recommend?
Well, not on Alzheimer's in particular, but in general, on how one copes with a disease or a malady or what have you. Norman Cousins' landmark book, Anatomy of an Illness.
Right.
In which he was diagnosed with a very life-threatening illness, but somehow found different ways of coping, coping with it through the struggles, towards his eventual cure of managing successfully battling this disease. In fact, one thing that he does recommend is laughter, which helps through with the coping. In fact, he admits in the book, and I may have to say I'm pleased with it, but he was, in order to get that laughter, he watched a lot of Marx Brothers movies, and that helped him with his healing.
Mm.
So, when they say laughter is the best medicine, Norman Cousins was a big proponent of it.
Right. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Tuesdays with Maury.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that one, actually. Yeah. I mean, it's not a medical book per se, but it's more of an encounter of, Mitch Albom and his favorite teacher, but also in between is, how ALS, the final struggles that Maury had with ALS. And yes, that's another book that's a landmark as well. So, but it also takes a more human side to another dreaded disease that, we wish there was a cure for, but right now there isn't.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Yeah, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's disease. Anyway, sir, again, this particular book that we've talked about this evening is
An Absent Mind by Eric Rill, published by Avante Press. It's $17, available in trade paperback.
And how can people find you?
Well, they can find me every week in the Montreal Times, in print, mobile app also, but also online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Peter.
Stuart Nallman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have a few more items in the Stuff File news to share with you before we get to our idiot of the day. A husband and wife crossing from Luxembourg into Western Germany had money squirreled away in their underwear. He had more than $350,000 taped to his genitals, and she had $11,000. Cops stopped the senior citizen and his wife during a routine check as they crossed into the country from Luxembourg. Customs officers reportedly found 5 bundles of cash taped to his testicles. The duo is now facing a serious fine, as European law dictates that anyone carrying more than $13,800 must declare the cash. They were asked the question, and they said no, they were not carrying more than that. And of course, they were. Well, customs officers will be sure to make him well hung out to dry, as it were. And the most recent monument offered by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals would be its proposed 10-foot tombstone along U.S. 129 in Gainesville, Georgia, to honor the several chickens that were killed when a truck overturned in January. No humans were hurt in the collision, thanks for asking, PETA. And had the chickens survived, they would have shortly been slaughtered. Needless to say, the Georgia Department of Transportation rejected the proposal. The people at PETA, which, by the way, I always thought stood for People Eating Tasty Animals, they really do have a lot of time on their hands, don't they? And we have a couple of stories that on the surface sound like urban legends, but believe me, they are indeed true. Story number one, a county official in Portland, Oregon, said his office gets 20 to 30 calls about rats in toilets every year, like the one Daniel Powers reported in March when he spotted the little guy with beady eyes looking up at him. And story number two, the problem is more severe in India, where an emergency crew rushed to a Mumbai area home, the home of Vipul Desai, in February to remove a 6-foot-long cobra from the toilet, but not before it repeatedly popped its head out of the commode, terrorizing Desai's wife and daughter. A team of wildlife rescue associates flooded the toilet, grabbed the snake, and released it into the forest. Well, gee, suddenly the debate over leaving the seat up or down seems so trivial now, doesn't it? Yes. And finally, before we get to our idiot of the day, an undercover cop spent 2 months dressed as an Amish woman in the hope of scaring off a man exposing himself to Amish children. Pulaski Township, Pennsylvania Sergeant Chad Adams posted a picture of himself in Amish attire on the department's Facebook page. Police were unable to charge the man because of a lack of evidence, but Sergeant Adams thought it was important to publicize his assignment to deter the suspect or others in the future. He wrote, "I wanted to share with you that we will use all means available to try to protect our children. That includes dressing up as an Amish woman to attempt to apprehend a pervert." The picture shows Sergeant Adams in a blue dress, black cloak, and bonnet. Local Amish residents who did not want their children to testify in court supplied the officer with the clothes to help scare away the suspect. Sergeant Adams said the man has not been seen in Pulaski, which is around 60 miles northwest of Pittsburgh, since January, but police believe the suspect is the same man who was sentenced to house arrest that month for similar behavior in neighboring Mercer County. Okay, now, I've seen the picture of Chad in Amish attire. He doesn't exactly make a fetching woman, I may add. Which leads me to ask, are there no police women on the force? And also, just how quick was Chad willing to play dress up? That's what I'd like to know. Yeah, and he was also very quick to put it on Facebook, I may add. Yeah, that needs some investigation. Anyway, let's move on. It's the end of the program, which you know that means, boys and girls. It's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Travis Rice, age 21, and an accomplice were seen on surveillance video breaking into Orion Motors in Plantation, Florida in March. The video that revealed Rice, at a key moment, yanking something from his pocket and not noticing that a card had fallen on the floor. The card, of course, was his state identification card, and further investigation revealed Rice's Facebook bragging about the break-in and theft of license plates and car keys. Now, it begs to ask the question, why, oh why, would someone be so sloppy as to leave ID at the scene of the crime and also brag about it on their Facebook page? Well, one reason, and one reason only,
He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0244. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0244. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.